You need to work away at those in the light of your congregation with its gifts, its energies, its passions, its churchmanship, in the light of the context in which you're working, remote, rural, commuter, rural, suburban, urban, inner urban, multi-faith or whatever it is, in the light of your resources. You may have historic endowments, you may or may not have a church school, you may have lots of old people's homes, you may have all sorts of different contexts. I, as the bishop, can't possibly know how you should work out that living God's love in your patch. What I can do is to be coming round, having a dialogue with you about how it's going, so that I'm asking questions and you're asking questions of me and we're learning. And we ask each parish to develop a mission action plan. Fundamental to that plan, and this would be one of my reflections from the John 4 passage, is something about listening or discerning. And I think because often we've drawn on secular models, it's very easy to get into sort of a brainstorming, prioritising type activity. And there's nothing wrong with that, as long as we don't think that the will of God is the same thing as the sum of our human wisdom. It may or may not be. I usually find they're overlapping circles. And there's an awful lot of stuff that comes out of brainstorming, often because there's some very powerful figures in a church who've got ideas where they want it to go, who can actually influence our brainstorming quite a bit. And we've all got bees in our bonnet about things. And actually, it's fine to get them up on the screen and look at everybody's ideas. But then we move into the much more fascinating, much more interesting process of how through that do we discern the two or three things that God's calling us to be and to do. And in the New Testament, of course, it's not that there are certain people who have the authority to decide what God is saying. That's an Old Testament model. The radical thing about the Spirit coming on the day of Pentecost, as Paul spells out in Corinthians, as he's theologizing on that, is actually everybody can speak what they think God is saying. Indeed, you know, he talks about, you know, everybody can prophesy, he says. But then it's actually for the whole body to discern what is of the will of God. And funny enough, I've just been working. Some of you may know Mark Ireland, who took over from me in Lichfield as a missionary, and who's written a lot on mission action planning. He's just about to come back to Blackburn as an archdeacon, I think. That's right. And over the summer, we've been putting together yet another book on mission action planning. And they said, what did I want to write on? I said, I want to write on discernment in mission action planning. And that'll be coming out sometime shortly, precisely because it seems to me the listening, the discerning is a really fundamental thing. Before I go on to the other things from John 4, let me just go back to the relationship between parish, deanery, diocese. What we've been asking parishes to do is to work out what their mission action plan is. What are the two or three things that they really need to concentrate on and maybe stop doing as well, which is going to lead to a healthy, thriving, mission-shaped collaborative church, to use the language we're using here. We ask the rural deans to collect in all the mission action plans and to, with the standing committee of the deanery, reflect on are there areas in common? Are there things that the deanery can do together? And I would say we've seen some fascinating results in that. Let me just give you one example. When we were doing this in Shropshire, we had one deanery where, when they collected the mission action plans in, they discovered that there were a whole cluster of parishes all were saying, we really think we've got to reboot, re-energise our children and our youth work, but we can't do it, we haven't got the resources. But what their mission action plans also pointed out, that all three of them had got funds, I think in at least two cases, if not three, which had come from closed churches, which meant they each had a couple of £1,000 a year, which actually was just being given to a local school, buying a few books, not frankly making any fundamental difference to the school budget, because it was so huge. And suddenly seeing if all those three benefices combined with their little bits of money, they could employ somebody half-time, which is what they wanted to do, to train and enable youth and children's work in a whole range of those parishes. Not to do it, but to be the person who's making sure there was a team who were trained, making sure all the blessed safeguarding stuff, which must be done, was done, because that's what volunteers often find very difficult when you've got to get it across a multi-parish benefice to set up children's work. And to act as a backstop if on a particular occasion some member of the lay team couldn't be there in that particular area. And that set things free. Now that came through the deanery looking at all the mission action plans. the phase we're struggling with in the Diocese of St Albans is how do we bring our 20 deanery mission action plans together as a diocese, but we are trying now to do that in order, just as is happening in Edinburgh, to align what we're doing at a diocesan level with what the parishes are saying are the priorities. Now, it's very difficult across 400 plus churches to genuinely whittle that down to a small number of things. It's a large, sprawling grassroots organisation, as most English dioceses are, which is very large. But that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to take exactly in the way I'm hearing Susan saying in Edinburgh, to take what is needed and to shape our training, our delivery around that. So I want to encourage you in that, and ours wouldn't be the only diocese doing that. A number of dioceses are doing it, although whether that's filtered down to other parts of the diocese, I don't know, but encourage people to think, I think, in that way, that sort of dialogue that's going on. Let me just pick up just a few other themes, if I may. In our discussions, we were based on John 4, we were looking at actually that mission-shaped collaborative ministry is about being out there. And just as in John chapter 4 and yesterday in Luke chapter 4, we saw again the same theme. It's something about the church getting away from the notion that it's just about bringing people in and it's also about us going out. They're not alternatives. It's that model of the church being the filling station I was talking about last night. But it seems to me that we are getting a new vision, I think, and we've touched on that at various points with, you know, the rise right across the country in food banks, credit unions, street pastors. There's been a whole sort of gentle welling up, as far as I can see, and I believe we're just at the early stages of that. So something about being out there. They're not at Jesus, isn't in the synagogue. As far as we can see in John 4, he doesn't even invite her into the synagogue. Whether that happens later, I don't know. Because, of course, the early Christian communities actually did go to synagogue, as far as we know. So something about being out there. I jotted down, but I've already referred to it, something about the listening, discerning process. It's a huge, rich, biblical theme, but we need to be a listening church, trying to discern where God is at work and joining in. The third thing I just want to talk about from that John 4 passage is it's fascinating that Jesus starts with vulnerability. And we were talking in our group about the fact that he's appealing to the woman because he has a need. There's a sharing of common humanity. And I think perhaps sometimes in our arrogance, we've come over when we've started declaring the good news of Jesus Christ, as if I've got all the truth and I'm going to give it to you and you need it and I'm telling you you need it and why don't you stay and listen? And no wonder people run away when they hear the word evangelism, if that's what it is. Actually, we start as profoundly broken, frail human beings who God is working in. And it seems to me that, and I've picked that up from various examples, it's all right, actually, to be a church that is quite open about its weaknesses and its failings and its foibles and so on, because it's ordinary people. And it seems to me that's what Jesus is doing. He starts off, in fact, saying, will you help me? Wouldn't it be interesting if we developed our mission strategy on saying, what have we got to go out to ask other people to help us with? And sometimes when we start, extraordinary things happen. If I can give you a slightly odd example, some years ago, and some of my former colleagues remember this, in the diocese when I was a missioner, we developed an outreach course that was going to train people. It was going to be used for people who want to explore the Christian faith. And we agreed or been asked to have this ready. And we worked very hard with the team on writing this material. And I remember thinking, this is just terrible. We've got no time to trial this. You know, and you must try these courses. And we sat round one night saying, we just got to do it, but where can we do it? And I remember thinking, well, the only way I can think about it, I've got to start it next week. I've got to start one of these groups and try it before we launch it. And I thought, where do I do it? And I thought, well, I suppose what I ought to do is to use my neighbours. So I quite literally went round to my neighbours and knocked on the door, and who I knew quite well. I mean, we had Christmas drinks and things, so we did know each other. And I said, look, I've got a real problem. I've got the bishop breathing down my neck. I've got this material I've written. I need some people to trial. It's meant to be people who are on the fringes or outside the church, and I need some people who come in and just, you know, criticise it, take it apart and all that. Would you help me? And I asked about 10 people, and one lot of neighbours wouldn't, they I could see immediately they closed down. But actually, all the rest came. Because I was saying, I've got a problem, I need you to critique what I've written. So they all turned up looking slightly embarrassed. We had bottles of wine around and things, and we had a nice time doing it. Anyway, they came for this course. And I have to say, they did pull it apart. You know, they kept saying, well, what does that word mean? And why do you say that? And I said, and then we did the course, and that was the end of it. Within 2 years, 4 of them were coming to church. Now, what's interesting about that was, I'd only asked them, because I was, as you might say, to use a theological phrase, stuffed. I needed some help to do some work, which they did. But quite incidentally, partly because we were friends, partly because I was asking help, and partly because I hadn't actually set out to do any overt evangelism, it was the process of talking, feeling part of it, enjoying being in a group that led them into other groups and so on. Something about vulnerability. Something about creativity. I think it's interesting, all the language in that passage in John 4 is about water and thirst, it's about longing, it's about deep, deep human desires. And of course the great themes of John's Gospel, of light and dark, of hunger and thirst, of death and life in John 11 and so on, actually touches on the deep things which transcend the more superficial things of ambition. Of the longing for wealth. Actually, these are the deep things inside us. And it seems to me finding creative ways to explore those areas are the common touching points for us today as we're seeking to work out what it means to be mission-shaped and indeed how we're going to do it collaboratively. But not only out there, not only listening, not only vulnerable, and not only creative. It's interesting, and we had a fascinating discussion on this, Jesus doesn't fudge the truth issues. He doesn't say to the woman, we're all the same. There's some quite robust stuff in this, isn't it? You know, he doesn't agree with the way she's worshipped and the Samaritans are worshipped, and that comes out. And he points out that she's had a colourful past, as you might say. And it's interesting that he's got a sufficient relationship to be able to talk about real differences. Now, how to do that in a way which is non-judgmental, because that is the great sin in today's society, isn't it? Any hint of being judgmental, is a really interesting question. But it seems to me we can't avoid that. It's no good just saying everything's nice and everything's the same and there's nothing that's different at all here. This is something about how do we learn to speak when there are disagreements and when we need to talk about truth. And it's immensely painful. Rob, when he was introducing me, said I lived in the Abbey community, a lay community, which I was in for 6 years. And we didn't make life vows, but you made promises during your time there. And one of the promises that stands out was we promised never to say anything of anybody that we weren't prepared to say to them to their face unless love and wisdom required it. Now, that meant... Well, actually, it's a very interesting phrase. It really thought out. The first thing was it meant again and again at coffee time when people gathered together, you'd start about to gossip and say something. You had to keep saying, oh, no, I can't say that because I'm not prepared to say it to them to their face. So you'd sit there drinking your coffee in silence. It cut through all of the gossip that was around because it was very nice to talk about people behind their backs. But would you say it to them? But actually, sometimes you were dealing with difficult issues where actually love and wisdom meant to bluntly tell the person how they're going, actually would just destroy them. They weren't at a place to hear that. And that's a really interesting question about how we engage with others. For me, the key principle was, is what I'm doing and saying, and there was time, especially in the leadership of the community, where we had to talk about someone, where relationships were falling apart. The question was, were we doing it because we were projecting and separating out, or were we doing it because we were generally loving that person and wanting the best for them, but knowing that it was going to take a while to try to help them get there? It seemed to me that was the principle underlying it. I notice in that John 4, and it seems to me again, it's interesting, if we're going to be mission-shaped, there is something here that eventually the encounter leads to the call for a response. This is, to use the phrase from the hymn, the love that is so amazing, so divine, that it demands my life, my soul, my all. It doesn't just say, oh, that's nice. The love of God doesn't leave us like that. The problem with grace, as Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, is it's costly. This is the treasure that's so wonderful that actually you suddenly, I've got to sell everything to have it, the treasure of the kingdom. And it's actually about saying to people what we're about and what I long for in myself, but it's far from realised because I'm a broken person as well, is something that's so precious in the whole of creation that it's actually calling for everything that I have to be lost in this wonder, love and praise. How do we say that? And how do we find ways today where we can say to people, this is the point at which we respond? Of course, in traditional sort of evangelical missions, it was calling people forward. In a more traditional liturgical context, it would be things like renewing baptism promises on Easter Eve. I think we're learning all sorts of ways today of doing things using symbols. And I think, having visual images. I notice on a lot of churches on Good Friday venerating the cross. It's interesting, lots of people have absolutely no problem coming and kneeling at the front of church around a great big cross, when, you know, lighting candles, putting down stones, making a cairn. It seems to me we need to, we were talking in our group about Posada, you know, taking the figures from the Christ story around from house to house before Christmas, with a sort of liturgical thing. Have you got room for Christ in your house? And actually somehow carrying the statues around to Mary and Joseph is sort of a subversive way that doesn't feel like, but actually you're left with the sense of, do I want Christ in my home? And being able to articulate, I think we need to be far, far more creative in today's church, in today's world, about finding ways which are real, authentic, but perhaps don't put people at the place where they're feeling put on the spot, where we can give people space to think, oh, what about that? How do I respond to that? That was one of the things we were exploring in our group. And I want to say one final thing is just a, and I am on time, sorry, I'm 2 minutes over actually. I want to just say one other thing. It seems to me that what I'm loving about these groups we're talking is the sense of sharing and enabling. And it's interesting, isn't it, that the model that Jesus used was of discipleship was what we might loosely call apprenticeship, that you learn by doing. You know, you're taken along, you watch, you reflect. I mean, that's what Jesus did in that passage in Luke 7 I was talking about last night, what he did in Luke 9, Luke 10. He took people always in pairs so that people watched someone who got experience doing it and so on. And it seems to me that if we're going to help the church become more mission-shaped, and if we're going to help it become more collaborative, yes, we can talk about the theory, but one of the things I think we need to do is simply, as we go home to our churches and to our dioceses, is to be constantly watching for opportunities where we can say to somebody else, we're going to do this bit of mission-shaped service, can you come with me? Actually, ourselves to model collaboration, joining, and giving them the opportunity to exercise ministry. Of course, early on they may not feel they want to do it. And again, we were talking in our group, one of the things I've learned over the years is you have to read people carefully, but actually one of the best ways to help people discover ministry is judiciously dropping people in it at the last minute. Sometimes if you go around and make a big thing of it and ask people to do it, they'll say they just won't believe they could possibly do it. It can be crushing for some people. You've got to be a bit careful on it. But actually there's some people you just know deep down, and actually very last minute, and I've on various occasions called people out and just quickly done an interview on something without giving them any warning at all, and they've got no choice because you just call them out, and suddenly them saying, I was terrified, but you know, it felt really good to be able to articulate what I feel so passionate about. And I just would encourage us not just to do the sort of the thinking and the writing articles for Dalston magazines, but consciously thinking, where can I take somebody with me as we go out in pairs on this mission-shaped and collaborative? So just a few thoughts of what I've been hearing and what I'm taking away and what I hope you'll go on exploring in the second half of this conference. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Bishop Allen, thank you very much indeed. Again, we're very grateful for what you shared with us yesterday, for the wonderful insights. And both then say two fine quotes from Bonhoeffer. Thank you very much indeed. And it warms my heart to hear you writing about you're writing about mission and mission action planning, particularly from the idea of seeking out and discerning where God is at work. So I look forward to reading that. We look forward to that book coming out. What's the title going to be? Do you know?
I can't remember. I have to look at my laptop.
Okay.
It's due to run later this year. I think it's Church House Publishing. Probably Church House Publishing.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll keep our eyes peeled. Thank you. So thank you very much indeed for that. And we wish you Godspeed as you return back to St Albans. Thank you for your time with us.
It's been great.
Yeah.